This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 38, sponsored by Comicole.com. Hi, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 38. My name is Connor. I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
And Ron.
Hey, Connor. You're back. You're normal again.
I'm back from Fairbanks, Alaska. It was a trip and a half, man.
Your world tour is over?
Yeah.
He did a tour of scenic railway routes over the country.
With no internet access?
No, none. No, I just used phones. Satellite phones.
Good to have you back.
And we three are iFanboy. We like comics. We read comics. And every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks the best one they read and they write about it on the website. And then we have this podcast to talk about it. We talk about all kinds of other stuff too. So before we get to the show, quick reminder, we are going to be reviewing comics from the previous week or the current week. And so we will be talking about plot points and spoilers and such. So if you haven't read your books yet, just get past the middle section or just wait a couple days till you finish. Josh has got the pick this week, so take it away, Josh.
I will tell you that I had a bit of a hard time this week. I'm like 7 books.
Ironically, because it was a really small week.
Yeah, there was a couple more I skipped. I could have gotten more, I guess. But you know what? Nothing jumped out at me. I was actually kind of having a really hard time with it. I had we'll go into some of the other stuff that we read, but at the end of the day, I thought the thing that left me with the best impression was the new Detective Comics issue 821, which I believe is. Only thing more than that is action, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
a whole lot of comics, and I love that they've never changed the number. Anyway, we got a new team on it this time after finishing up the 1 year later story with James Robinson. They have Paul Dini writing it, and J.H. Williams III on art. If you don't know, Paul Dini was the guy who was behind the Batman animated series, which I have always held to be one of the absolute best characterizations of Batman and Bruce Wayne and the people sort of in that universe. I actually hold them as sort of the standard to everything. That I thought that did it really well. So
you're definitely right about that.
Yeah, I think that they just I don't know they just nailed it for some reason. So I was really looking forward to this. Now I'll be completely honest. This was not a stellar knock you off your chair issue of a comic book, but it was a really solid sort of short one-issue story by a guy who really, really understands this character. And that was enough to make me sort of appreciate it. And almost more so, I'm looking forward to what's coming because this felt like it was a jumping-off point. It was a place they're going to get started on sort of bigger, better stories.
Well, I felt like it was reading an episode of the cartoon.
Yeah.
It was very, very structured, like his one-shot episodes.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because basically the story is that there's a new villain and that's revealed at the end. I don't really need.
It's not even a new villain. It's just a guy.
But no, but I mean,
he's not going to show up again.
New villain, but the thing that Batman sort of kept commenting is that it's just another run of the mill costume villain. And
it's a gang of criminals who are robbing the rich, the upper crust society, by infiltrating them, as you know, in they show up at parties and events, and then they end up robbing people.
And so, you know, Bruce has to become sort of a detective, and what he does instead of acting like Batman is that he goes out as Bruce Wayne to hang out with the elite in society and see if he can come up with the person who's been robbing these people. And there's just some really nice moments. Like, he absolutely hates having to be Bruce Wayne and having to hang out with these regular people. There's this really good line about, you know, it's 3:30 and I'm in an after-hours dive. And I rarely get tired fighting muggers and madmen at this hour, but tonight all I want to do is go home and sleep. Like, this is just killing him.
Right.
He can deal with everything else that happens, but this is just awful. And, you know, I kind of get the feeling that this story, because Denny, if you don't know, also, he works in TV. He's a writer-producer on Lost. You know, he's been in Hollywood for
not,
a while.
Not anymore, not anymore, but he was.
Yeah. He isn't?
Was. No.
No, yeah, he's done.
I don't know.
Trust me, he's done.
Well, you made a call. and it kind of feels like it's the revenge of the production assistant or the receptionist or the person who has to deal with all these sort of high ego, high status people in is what the villain is. He's like the guy who gets back at all these people. The art was by J.H. Williams III, who did Prometheus. I don't know if you guys
Prometheus.
Ever read that. Prometheus. Alan Moore's ABC series. I knew what it was. I just said it wrong.
I know. It's just funny because it's just like we were correcting you. It made me laugh.
Know how hard it is to go through this comic and talk about this stuff. Write it, sure. Talk about it. Like, and then on page 9. No. But the art is it's sort of a different flavor from what we're used to in Batman. It's really, really good in the sense that the layouts are really interesting and the sort
they're
of
very inventive.
The pages flow. Right, very much so. And I made the point that if you look at any given page, there's usually at least something on every page that really catches your eye with his compositions and the way things are put together. It's really nice. There are a couple of panels of Bruce Wayne where he looks downright goofy. One of them looks like he's got a creepy mustache in.
I mean, if you look at the pages, you're not going to see layouts like this in any other book. He's very unique in his storytelling, but you're right. His faces are really iffy sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Batman and Bruce Wayne. His Bruce Wayne just does not look consistent from scene to scene.
Not really. If you notice, though, there's this really weird thing that's happened is that in all the scenes as Bruce Wayne, everything is very flat and line drawn.
Yes, and in Batman,
it's rounded and shaped and colored in a certain way. Batman looks painted almost.
Right.
Like, it's really interesting to show that, like, Bruce Wayne is flat and lifeless, and Batman is full and colorful and three-dimensional, and that's something that might slip by if you're not really paying attention. Really good interaction with Tim and Robin and Gordon and Alfred in this. It was just, like, a solid, good issue of Detective Comics, and I've been away from Batman for a long time. I started reading it up again when 1 year later started, but it's nice. It's nice to see this, and I'm really looking forward to what happens in the future.
There's a couple of really good things about this comic that I've actually liked this more as I think about it. Like I liked it a lot when I read it, but I like it more now as I thought about it later. One is that it's self-contained. So this is going to please a lot of people who hate like the 6 to 12 part multi arc stories. You get a beginning, a middle, and an end in the course of the whole issue, and that's something that's, for me, was a hallmark of my memories of Batman comics, was you'd always get this mini mystery and it would be over. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a big fan of the long arcs, but this is something that I used to enjoy as a kid, the quick mystery. The other thing is, he's actually being a detective in this comic.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember back during one of the detective reboots, they said they were going to bring him back to being, quote-unquote, the detective in the Detective Comics, and it never really happened, but this is him actually doing detective work. He doesn't really do a lot of punching here. It's more of putting clues together and using his brain to figure out, you know, who's behind these crimes. And the other thing is, I didn't really think about it until recently, is that it's so odd to see Batman and Robin together. Because for the past almost 10 years, they've been completely separate.
They operate separately.
Apart. You know, Robin's in the Titans or the Young Justice before, and Batman's in Justice League, and Robin had his own book, and Batman had his books, and they rarely crossed over, and And now to see them fighting together, and it's been happening more lately, is still jarring to me. I'm not used to it. It makes me happy. I had a big smile on my face during one of the panels, but I like that they've brought them back together and they're keeping that way. So I think this is a really good start. I'm really excited about this.
Can I shock you guys?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I bought it.
Oh my god.
I'm shocked.
The first issue of Batman that I've ever purchased.
Really?
I had a whole rant ready to go against you for not buying it, but now I'm stuck.
Well, I mean, be thankful that my store didn't get Franklin Richards one shot.
Heliopolis.
I know, which now I got to track down because I freaking love that book. But so I was like, I had four books, and I was like, and actually, my comic book store owner actually just did me a favor, so I felt bad only buying four books. So I'll buy another book, and I'll buy some bags and boards,
and a statue and a bust.
Yeah, and I'll take one of those and that box of tampons.
Did you buy it because it was called in here because it was pick of the week?
Both. Honestly, both. I bought my books today, the day after the comics came out, so I was already late. So I knew this is what you had picked, and then also because it was Dinny. And now that I have I shocked you guys, and I have a story. Because I'm reading this book, and I'm getting on in the plot, and I'm seeing how it's, you know, these low-level criminals infiltrating society. And I'm like, you know, I've read this before. Like, I've read this exact concept, or I know this concept. Like, this is like, oh, this is awful. I can't believe you just read. And then, you know, like, when you see somebody and you're trying to remember where you recognize them from, and then you realize they were, like, on the real world.
Right.
And you don't really know them.
It happened to me once with George Clooney in the bathroom.
Right, exactly. Or it happened to me with several people in the real world before. So much to the point where
it happened to me with real world people too.
Well, I was talking to one girl, convinced I knew her, and we had a 20-minute conversation trying to figure out my connection to her. And then she's like, "Well, I was on the real world," and I was like, "I don't know you, do I?" And she's like, "No, you don't." And I was like, "Did you just have fun with this conversation?" She said, "Yes, I did." And the reason why is because a couple of weeks ago I listened to a podcast that Dinny did with some guy where Dinny basically told what his first story in Batman was. And so, like, an hour after being completely convinced that Dinny's a hack and just completely shattered, and then I was like, oh, that's where I knew it from. He was just talking about this issue. So,
he ripped himself off.
Yeah, so that was kind of funny. But I thought it was really good. And my favorite thing, which I thought you guys would mention, which you guys didn't, which I actually hoped to have seen more, was on the second and third page when Batman got physical with the guy. There were these little
white splashes.
The little black and white splashes where the contact was. And it happens in the very beginning of the book and at the very end of the book. And I thought that was just a really cool effect.
Yeah, that was
really nice. Yeah. I noticed it when I was reading. And then that whole last panel where the train apparently hits him.
Yeah.
You know my favorite thing, actually, that I think about on the very last page, which is never done before, is Batman and Robin's parent trophy gallery.
Yeah, I thought that was cool, too.
Where they have a wall of masks where they've taken off villains.
You know, there's a Harley Quinn.
They've never
there.
Done that before, and that's Bane pretty cool.
Like
yeah,
that. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So anyway, I was impressed. Am I going to keep buying it? I don't know. We'll see. But I was impressed. So.
Well, I think what he's from what I've read, it's going to be a bunch of his run is all self-contained stories. So
cool. Maybe.
Do you know if it's like a limited run? Do we know how long it's going
to
be?
It's hard. I don't know for sure.
Yeah,
I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, they might say it's 12 issues and it ends up.
Well, just
being
say eight, something, and then we'll get an email next week.
Six,
tells us the truth.
Four.
All right, there we go.
Oh, okay. 11-2. Dinny is going to be on for the next 7 years. Yeah, exactly.
I was going to go into this whole thing, Ron, about how you worship Paul Dini and you basically stalk him on the internet and you're always sending me links about Paul Dini and you love the cartoon and how could you not buy this, and now I'm stumped.
It sounded like you pressed a button.
Will wonders and we're back! Will wonders ever cease? That's all I have to say.
No, you continue to surprise.
Thank you. I try to keep you on your toes.
I am impressed. I think I'm going to owe him. You know what, though? I bought X-Factor for the same reason.
But right, yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to – I mean, the thing is that sometimes – and this kind of – we were talking about this on the site, and it ties into Uncanny X-Men this week as well, is that sometimes, like, I happen to carry a balance between the books that I normally get versus the books that I'm slightly interested in. And Dinny being on this was really kind of the thing that put me over the top.
You went with the player and not the uniform.
Exactly. That's one of the rare cases where I would go with the player and not the uniform.
I don't know whether or not I'm
going to keep buying it, but, you know, but we'll see.
Well, the other side of the coin now is that Josh and I picked up Uncanny X-Men 475, which is something we don't normally buy, but you're
what
your
an favorite, aberrant week.
Favorite book.
How about that for a segue? I'm impressed.
Thank you.
So what did you guys think of Uncanny 475?
If I can go real quick, Josh, just because you mentioned it on the site, I didn't get really get to talk about it. I liked it. It's a bit odd that they didn't throw in any exposition for people who you figure the popularity that Brubaker brings, he's going to bring a lot of new readers in.
Right.
So you'd think they would have thrown something, even minorly exposition.
Is he popular enough to put a spike on an X-Men book, though? Which is already a big seller.
He put a spike in Daredevil. All
right. Well, yeah, but Daredevil's not X-Men.
No, but I mean, he's got his fans.
Yeah, okay.
And
he definitely would have brought in new readers.
But other than that, I mean, I know enough X-Men where I wasn't 100% confused. I was more like 63% confused.
You know what they did do in this, which they don't in a lot of books? Whenever I start reading X-Men, I get this exact same feeling. I don't know what's going on or who anybody is. They did introduce everybody.
That was good.
Yep.
And thank God, because I had no idea who any of these people were. I was like, I think that might be that girl. And it was Polaris, and I kind of knew who she was and everything.
My question is, why is the professor walking?
Because he lost his powers in House of M, and the use of his powers were directly linked to his paralysis.
Okay. Like we talked about this on a podcast.
Every time Xavier loses his powers, he can walk again. So.
And isn't Rachel Summers not around anymore?
It's Rachel Gray.
It's Rachel. Yeah, she changed her name to Rachel Gray. And
see,
yeah,
that's how far back.
She's been around. Yeah, she's been around for a couple years now. Okay. So.
She's some sort of clone, or.
She's Scott and Jean's daughter in the alternate future, where the Days of Future Past future timeline.
And isn't it against the law to have an X-Men book without Wolverine in it?
No.
I don't think either of them do. Is Carrie using him?
I don't think he is.
No, he's not. He's not. He's not in any of the titles. Yeah, which is great, because he's in Astonishing and he's in Avengers.
Avengers.
So. Cool. Okay. So, Josh, you take it over.
I mean, it was good, I think. It felt very much like a regular X-Men issue. It was kind of easier to understand than most, but I always have a hard time because I don't know who any of these characters are, and I don't know any of the back stuff, so I don't know what to pick up on, I guess. It didn't feel to me like anything. I was like, ooh, look at that's happening, but I don't really have any frame of reference to play it up against. So if I knew what was going on, it might have been very good. And people on the site have all said it was great. A lot of people really liked it. You know, the art was pretty good.
My base knowledge of these characters, I enjoyed it. Just knowing just barely enough about everybody that I was able to, you know, get into it. I didn't like the art.
You didn't like the
art? No, I did not.
Okay.
I thought it was very weak.
Can I shock you guys again?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's not really a shock. I fucking loved it. This was so good. I was like giggling. It was so good.
Really?
Brubaker nailed it. And I was honestly, like,
you were skeptical.
I was skeptical, but I don't think I verbalized to the level of skeptical I was, and I was really skeptical after that horrible, horrible Marvel podcast, but or press conference or retailer conference call, whatever you want to call it. But he nailed it. I mean, number one. He didn't ignore what was before. Like, he picked up the fact right now that Polaris has been on the run, and she basically in the issues that came before this, there was a big fight with Apocalypse, where Apocalypse used Gambit and Polaris and turned them into horsemen and turned them into villains for a short period of time, and so she's been on the run from that. So he tied that in the beginning with the anti-Apocalypse cult trying to track her down. I thought the way they introduced the characters was awesome. The characterizations were dead on. The thing is about what makes the X-Men good is the X-Men can be good when they're a team of five or seven, and when they get lost in the numbers of characters, in the 40-plus characters that have been X-Men, that's when they're bad. Mm-hmm. And so Brubaker was smart enough to say, okay, now we've got a team of five plus Professor Xavier. And
it is a good small number. You really can focus on the characters.
It makes it manageable.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're going to go into space and it's going to be a Shi'ar, and on the cover, the wraparound cover, you see the people they're fighting on the cover of the Starjammers, which are the space pirates. Like, we haven't had, like, a true Shi'ar, awesome space epic kind of thing in years. I am kind of a little tentative and annoyed at the Vulcan aspect of it, because Deadly Genesis really didn't totally do it for me. But I think it's kind of cool that he's tying that into it. And to see, even though Xavier doesn't have any powers, but to see him back in that kind of machination running the team from, you know, the coach on the bench.
I like the fact that he was kind of, it's almost he's almost a shadowy leader at this point.
Yeah.
He's been outcast. Nobody really likes him or trusts him, and I like that
Right, and that's kind of how he was early on. Not so much that nobody trusted him, but he was like the shadowy leader who hung out in the mansion and told them telepathy what to do, you know, telepathically what to do. And I thought
from Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, exactly. The one character who had the most work in this, who was the least developed, was Warpath, and I thought that Brubaker, like, what he's done with the character...
I liked him a lot.
He was great.
I have questions about him.
Okay, shoot.
He's not the same guy from the giant-sized X-Men, right?
No, he's his little brother.
Okay. So why does he hate Charles Xavier?
Because, okay, basically, he hates Charles Xavier because he blames Xavier for his brother's death.
Okay. And he tried to kill him or kidnap him? Or?
What happened was that he tried to exact revenge on him by kidnapping him and threatening to kill him, and that plan was thwarted. And then he joined Emma Frost's Hellions and was a bad guy for a while. And then when the Hellions all died except for him, he joined X-Force and was on Cable's team for a while. And then he's kind of disappeared for the past couple of years, and now he's back.
Okay, what's his power?
Super strength. I mean, he has the same powers as Thunderbird. That's the only lame thing, is that he's the exact same powers as his brother. Is that he's strong and agile and like it's physical strength, physical. You know, he's the Colossus of the team.
Cool.
So, and the addition of the knives was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
I mean, so something as little as that to give him a little more depth. The art was okay. I don't like, and this isn't the artist's fault, but I don't like what they're doing with Havoc's costume in general right now. Like, I don't like the blue neon glowy kind of aspect of Havoc. I liked it better when he was just in the black suit with the white circle.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of me as a purist. Go on.
I think the only thing I didn't really like about the art is that I thought that Xavier looks a little too much like an alien.
Yeah, a little too Vulcan-y.
He's just a little too pointy, and
yeah, Spock like, yeah.
I just thought it was bad.
But the art
fits the style of book, I think.
It's very middle of the road.
Yeah. Who is this person? Who's this artist?
Where's his name?
Tan, isn't it?
Billy Tan.
Yeah, Billy Tan. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah. But the one thing
you're on notice.
The one thing, but you guys are completely gonna laugh at me or whatever, but the one awesome thing that made me giggle more than anything was on the cover, the upper left-hand corner, the little heads of the team.
Oh, I loved that.
That is awesome. That was like the awesomeness of the 80s and early 90s of Marvel books, or the X-Men books specifically, is that you had the heads of the team members that were on the team at that time on the cover.
Same with Avengers. I'm down with you there.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, so this is it had enough to feel like uncanny of 20 years ago, but modern enough to be, you know, to be notably different and not just a rehash.
I haven't heard you this excited about Uncanny X-Men in probably ever.
Oh, I am psyched.
You know what's funny is I was in this shop and I looked down and I saw like issue 9 of Excalibur, and I remember you like a few months ago, I'm so excited for the new Excalibur. You haven't mentioned it since.
Oh no, it's been all right. It hasn't just been that great.
But like this is real. Yeah. You're like, oh.
Yeah. So, anyway, so So as far as I'm concerned, thumbs up Uncanny.
It sounds like that's sort of the consensus going on right now.
Woo. Are you guys going to keep buying it?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm also going to buy the Mike Carey one too. Yeah.
I'll make a deal. If you guys keep buying it, I'll keep buying Diddy Batman.
All right.
Look at this. This is how. Yeah.
This is consensus building.
Yeah.
So we've been mandated to talk about 52 this week. Daryl has spoken.
So says Serpentor.
Okay, but you're not going to like it. All right, I've been reading this, and I am...
We're week 9. We're at week 9.
We're week 9. I'm kind of a little underwhelmed in that it feels to me like it's very, very, very standard. It just feels like I'm getting a year's... Like, I think I wrote like a year's worth of mediocre comics crammed into... Or 10 years worth of mediocre comics crammed into 1 year. And there were bits in it that I really like. I really like the question, but I like for some reason whoever's writing the bits with Montoya, like
I'm
hanging.
I'm pretty
out
sure it's Rucka because Rucka loves Montoya and he loves Question.
Maybe, but she's, like, she's hanging out in these, and I do. But like, she's like this is a lesbian bar, you know? Like they need to let go of that a little bit. Like, don't make that the focus. Make that something about her life. You don't have to tell me every time I see her that she's gay.
Gay?
Sorry, he's a bit thick. It just some of it comes across as kind of corny. I mean, and I don't know, it was kind of like a joke that who is the villain who on that crazy world with the weird name?
Devilance the Pursuer?
Yeah, that's the one.
That was dumb.
That's terrible.
Reminded me of like a Kirby character.
Yeah.
And like that stuff's fun, I guess, if you like sort of classic comics. I'm not really into it. I don't know. I'm not. I don't think it's necessarily bad, but it's not my favorite kind of thing. And I was really hoping for something a little more.
I would say with writers who are Jeff Johns, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka, Mark Waid, it's shockingly middle of the road. I'll take you one step further. Yeah.
I'll take you one step further. This is the worst issue of 52 yet.
Oh, sure.
That's kind of how I thought. Yeah,
that's definitely the truth. Yeah.
This was. I thought the Steele storyline with his niece is like so cliche.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's making her learn the hard way, and she gets impatient and goes to the villain and gets. I was like, oh my god, that's so cliche. And the art in this issue is downright bad.
That's the biggest thing I thought while reading this that 52 on the whole has suffered from is that the art is not good.
It looks like, and honestly, it looks like I did the layouts. It's like box. There's nothing like the fight scene with them is all six or four box layouts with like one splash in there. Like it's just like it was like it's. I think they're starting to trip over each other. I think that now we're seeing the problem with this weekly kind of project. Everybody's getting in the way of each other. And the thing is, you're going to tell me that. I'm sorry. I know this is a bit of a nitpick, but you're going to tell me that. Steele's niece runs off to Luther, and then a week later, Steele goes to look for her.
Cool.
Like he's like, well, I'll wait till 11. All right, I'll give.
Furthermore, Steele's niece, she was like a superhero team. I mean, like she had a costume and everything.
She had armor that fell apart.
She'd been on the side of the Angels, let's say, for a little while.
Yeah.
And she's so immediately because she's pissed off buying into the other side. I mean, I know teenage girls can be flighty, but it's just like. It doesn't seem anything behind it.
No, you're the one who's wrong. You don't get it.
Yeah.
Like that. It's so cliche. It's just horribly.
It may as well be an episode of Family Matters. It's not.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I think the two most interesting storylines are the Question and Montoya ones. Even though I don't know where that's going.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the parts when they write the question, though.
Right. Yeah. He's great.
You don't realize it where he's asking questions all the time and he's just being.
No.
That's brilliant.
I think Rucka's coming out with a question book, which I'll probably have to buy.
Mm-hmm.
But and then the Booster Gold storyline, which is getting way less.
And the Dibny storyline.
Yeah, well, that's tied into the Booster Gold storyline.
Yeah.
That stuff's the interesting stuff. I don't care about Steele and his niece, even though I used to like Steele. And this Starfire and Animal Man and Adam Strange, who cares?
What do you think of Starfire's boobs? Because that's really all that existed in that section of their story. It was like, oh, there's Starfire's boobs, and they're her boobs again.
You always got to make sure you get them in there.
This is just, I'm shocked at how bad this was.
Montoya is also a supermodel in the same sense.
Yes, exactly.
She was not a supermodel.
And she's also quite buxom in her white beater.
It's quite true. I will say, there was there was a Starfire appearance in Gotham Central where they
made fun of
that
a
little bit. It was really funny. Where she shows up in the precinct because they had to question her because like a Robin clone had died or something like that. Really good stuff.
But the funny thing is that I'll keep buying it just to see how much worse it can get.
And they also need to lose the history of the DCU segment because
they got
to
be just about caught up.
Boring. Well, they're covering things that happened last week now.
After Crisis came out, they put out a really good 2-issue prestige format miniseries, The History of the DC Universe, and it was. Art by George Perez, and it was written by Marv Wolfman, and it was really, really good, even though it was just basically an overview of what had happened, what the new universe was made up of.
Right.
That was well done. This is not well done. I think 52 is basically, issue is the poster child for what is people consider to be boring about the DC universe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's very middle of the road, nothing interesting happens, there's a lot of big, stupid villains, and...
You can't see me, but I've got my finger on my nose.
Yeah.
So that's
disappointing. That's very disappointing.
Yeah. So hopefully that will satiate Serpentor. I mean Daryl. With talking.
Well, we're definitely gonna get a letter.
Yeah. Oh, we can't wait for the letter. So, so pretty light week in comics, but we were begging for a light week, so I guess they listened to us.
Yeah.
So.
If there's some talk about some other books and stuff going on in the Pick of the Week thread. So if there's other books you want to talk about,
iFanboy.com.
Over there, we made some comments about some other books that came out too. Again, this week we are sponsored by ComicHole.com, which is your best solution for discounted comics and trades. We've already had a couple of people on the site say they went in and used the site, and they're getting subscriptions through there, and they like it. They've got all new Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image books. They're all 40% off. You can go by their site, and you can pre-order stuff if you're in a place where you can't get to a comic shop or something like that, or you want to save a lot of money in your weekly books. They've got also trade paperbacks and hardcovers, and they're all 30 to 50% off, and they're always adding to that everything. You can go to comichole.com, which is ComicHole, from their hole to your house, which is the best slogan on the web.
Fantastic.
The best part of it all is that we arranged with them to get a discount for iFanboy users. So if you go there on your first order, in the coupon code, put in iFanboy, I-F-A-N-B-O-Y, and you get 5% off your order. And that goes through the end of July. So go over to comichole.com, and thank you very much for sponsoring us.
Yeah. So we got inundated with email this week.
Yeah, we had a lot.
Inundated. So
we picked the best.
Let's dive right in. Yeah, we picked the top ones. So so our first email comes from Dominic, aka Mayor McCheese.
Well, I think he's got a different AKA every time he writes.
I think he might be schizophrenic.
I think that's his shtick.
Yeah, I like the shtick. It's funny. It makes me laugh.
Yeah. He's got to top this one though.
His question was wondering if we could tell him about the Age of Apocalypse books from the 90s, if they're worth a read. He was looking on Amazon and he found them. He remembered when they came out, but he didn't know what was going on at the time. And he figures he's in the mindset at this age to better understand. and Age of Apocalypse books were an X-Men crossover event in the mid-90s. And it's funny that he should ask this, because I was actually just home today at my parents' swimming in their pool, because it's hot in here in New York.
We couldn't get by without a hot
restaurant. Oh, I thought you were going to make it. We were doing
so
well.
But so I'm in my old bedroom, and I'm changing into my bathing suit, and I won't say anything further.
More details, and do it
slower.
And
I'm looking around at my shelves, and I've got all my old toys and stuff that are still there, and I actually have an old Apocalypse from his rendering from Age of Apocalypse on the shelf, which is an awesome action figure. It's very weighty. It's got a lot of heft to it. And I was like, oh, Age of Apocalypse. That was actually pretty good. I would recommend you pick it up. Basically, in a nutshell, it's an alternate universe where certain events way before the X-Men were founded don't happen. Xavier gets killed or something like that, and instead of the universe we know now, it's a universe that's controlled. It's an Earth that's controlled by Apocalypse, and it's different. It's what would happen to all the X-Men in a different iteration. Like Wolverine and Jean Grey are a Weapon X team, and they're all different. There are different takes on the different X-Men teams, so it's pretty cool. So I would recommend it. So
one of the better X crossovers, you'd say.
It was one of the better ones of the 90s, and it actually had really good art. That was during the Joe Midoriya period on X-Men, and that was really good. So Dominic, check it out, and you can go click on one of the Amazon banners on our site and buy and find it through there. And so, because we'd like that.
If you feel like buying it through there, you can do that.
All right, our next question. Someone else.
Brian in Palatine, Illinois. Ron, you've got a thing about Palatine.
Oh yeah, Palatine. My sister lived in Palatine for a year. I hung out there a couple of times back in the 90s, actually. So I'm down with Palatine, Brian.
Brian from Palatine, Illinois says he's joined the podcast. Thanks, Brian. And he wants to know if we like the new... He specifically asked me, but I'm going to throw it out to everybody, because I am generous like that. He wants to know if we like the new Green Lantern, the way Geoff Johns is writing him, and if we like the reemergence of the Green Lantern's core. He loves it personally.
Bring back Kyle Rayner.
Isn't he in the new Green Lantern core book?
No, he's an Ion. He's in his own book.
There's three Green Lantern books?
I have completely dropped. I've been a steady buyer and reader of Green Lantern since the late 90s, and I've pretty much dropped them all. Although I am buying the Green Lantern solo title book, but it's been awful up to this point. So that's my opinion. So
mine's very similar.
I think all of ours are similar. Yeah.
Talking Sharkmen.
We all hated the pre 1 year later Green Lantern books. Hated it. Yeah. I think we
except all except the Return of Hal miniseries was good. That was okay. Yeah, it wasn't great. It was good,
but it was fun. I was enjoying it. Yeah. And then they launched Green Lantern number one.
Yeah, and it was just downhill from there. The scary. So
and the post 1 year later Green Lantern showed a lot of promise, and then it's gone off in a wonky direction. So I don't know how much longer I'm going to stick with it. And these guys will tell you that I like Hal Jordan a lot.
He refused to read Kyle Rayner. At a certain point, I believe he refused to even acknowledge that he existed.
Yes.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for him being in Grant Morrison's JLA, I think that he would have to this point, he'd be like, Kyle who?
Talking about what?
What?
Yeah, so we unfortunately are not enjoying it as much as you are, Brian. We don't like it.
But hey, if you like it, keep reading it. Nothing, you know. And the GL Corp might have promise. I can't afford another book. although I do like Guy Gardner and Kilowog.
I am gonna buy the Guy Gardner series by Chaikin.
Okay,
that's coming up.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I might get that too, actually.
Oh yeah,
because we like the Chaikin.
He sort of said, I read an interview somewhere with him about it, but I think that's going to be really good.
Cool.
Our next letter, this is going to be familiar. It's the concluding chapter in a trilogy of letters from the Bat, who we now know his name is Jason.
From San Antonio, Texas.
Jason previously wrote in about how his fiancée...
Hot there.
Yeah, no.
I actually have a question for Jason, is that where is the basement in the Alamo?
Yeah, if you could write us in to that, we'd be grateful.
Because I'm going to San Antonio and I want to see the basement. So, all right. Anyway,
so Jason previously wrote in about how his fiance didn't believe that people his age, he's 31, read comics or should read comics, and everybody who read comics was dorks. So we set him straight. Now he's writing back to say that we suggested he give his fiance some comics to show her that they're not all stupid for kids. And he wrote back.
Well, they're all pretty much stupid, but they're not for kids.
Right, they're not for kids. That's true. Those layers of stupid.
Right, go on.
So he writes back to say he brought her to the shop on a few occasions, and the shop owner tried to challenge her to read comics. He said he wanted to try to find a book she would like, and if she'd give it an honest try, she and Jason both knew it wouldn't work. She's not a reader, plain and simple. She's an extroverted people person. He's a writer, a quiet, introverted writer. So she's not a reader.
But she's an extroverted people person. So, I mean, the thing is, we don't know anything about her. But, like, Jason, what kind of TV shows does she watch? Like, is she into any sort of fiction of movies, TV, anything, books, anything?
You give us a genre.
Yeah, give us a genre of her interest. Because he asked, do we still think Strangers in Paradise would work? And I still say yes.
I think if she's not a reader, then Strangers in Paradise might be too in-depth and too layered.
Well, that's why I was going to say maybe something like Blue Monday might be more up her alley.
I would take issue with the fact that describing her as extroverted makes her someone who wouldn't want to read comics. I mean, we're all pretty extroverted here.
We've got more extroversion than we need, to be honest with you.
Also, I think really the ultimate solution to this whole problem is Jason, you've got to break off the engagement.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it.
Yeah.
It's over, Jason.
And if you want her to listen to the podcast, then we'll break the news to her. That we'll do it. That's fine. But.
Yeah.
You gotta face facts.
The Bat
while you can.
Here's the message. The Bat's fiance, I'm sorry, it's over.
It just
if you hadn't proposed to her yet, we would also do that for you. Because we need to do that. That's a classic radio show moment.
And the Bat's girlfriend, you're a lawyer. What kind of lawyer? Do you happen to do entertainment law at all? Because we might need a lawyer. So. Even though we just ruined your personal life. But, you know, we can help your professional life.
If you're in San Antonio and you see an F-16 with a Batman logo on it flying around, that's Jason. Wave to him on his way.
Jason's work,
past.
Yep.
Next letter, please.
Good work, Jason. Next letter is from J.D., who's been catching up on our older podcasts. He's now addicted, by the way. Thanks, jerks. I love how nice our writers are. he's listening to the one where we're talking about Wizard and Montoya's upcoming series, and he's curious why we hate Wizard so much. Besides the timeliness of the mag, why does everyone seem to hate it, including Frank Miller? Does Frank Miller like anything? He reads it every month, and he asks, is it because Wizard's in the pocket of DC and Marvel and rarely tell the truth about quality of comics, or is it just because it constantly blows smoke up the creators' asses? He's curious.
That's definitely a couple of good reasons why.
Yeah.
Now, I thought he was being sarcastic, but then if he reads it all the time, I don't know.
Yeah.
We need Wizard, more smiley faces.
Yeah. Wizard is just the epitome of the stereotypical comic reader. You know, kind of very juvenile humor. Focuses a lot on boobs and toilet humor.
The problem. Here's the thing. I'm the only one out of the three of us who still buys it, right?
I gave it up a few years ago, two or three years ago. Yeah.
And Josh, you never really bought it, right?
Bought it for a little while in college, but it was a lot of weird shit I was into then.
cocaine and wizards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was. Anyway,
midgets.
Gaelic. Anyway,
tofu.
I still buy it, and the reason why I buy it is number one is because I'm a magazine whore, but which we've talked about before, we won't get into. But I've mentioned this before. Why I buy it is because they show previews of upcoming like action figures and busts and statues and things like that, and I like to see those pictures. And every now and then, like in the most recent issue, there is an article that is actually worth reading, where there was a great article about the suicide of Jack Cole, who is the creator of Plastic Man, who killed himself. I had no idea. It was a fascinating story.
And every once in a while, they'll ruin a story for you.
Yeah, but but then every once in a while they'll spoil something. Like in this issue, they could have spoiled the Spider-Man reveal, but they wrote in big letters, "Spoiler, don't look," but on the page of Spider-Man taking his mask off, which is like stupid. The problem is that, like you said, they're in the pocket of Wizard and DC, and it's less about Marvel comics journalism with them, and it's more about
promotion.
Promotion. It's a promotion magazine. It's like practically. I mean, it's practically bought. It's practically like advertorial, as we call it.
I mean, you're not like they have a lot of other options to go to for advertisements.
Right. Exactly.
You're it's right like, that in that every month there tends to be something good to read. And that would always be my excuse for continuing to read it.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, the balance was so tipped to the other side of just awful things.
Yeah.
Versus one good thing.
To me, it's so about it, with them. It was so about the hot new artist and the hot new anything and everything that's hot that it sort of tends to encourage the industry to shift people around and do things and put the hot guy in a new book, not necessarily because he's really good or would fit for the story, but because they know it'll pinch sales for a month, and they're just part of that mechanism.
Plus there's the whole conflict of interest where they've got the price guide and they've got the ownership in that comic slabbing company,
and they push that like
and they
crazy,
push it like crazy, and that's the price guide is completely unrealistic, and it pushes the industry in a bad direction.
They're all about speculation and sales and all this stuff, and that's more of a, not to say that they don't talk about good stories and good work and everything, but the more of the focus is on what is this going to be worth and what is the value, and like, and it's like, and a lot of us are beyond that. Like that was true in the 90s. Like they were perfect in 1994. Like the Wizards glory years were those mid 90s. Now, you know, I could give two shits about variant covers, and I don't need like four pages about it.
So. You know, it's funny about all this is like I can't quite figure out who's buying their stuff other than people who've always been buying it, or because everybody who comes to our site is like 30 and married. Most of them have kids.
That's not true.
No, well, not everybody, but like a lot of people do. So it's not written for those people. It doesn't.
The problem
is
that they've been around for 15 years, and you go into any Stop It Shop, and they're on the magazine rack.
That's true.
Are they really still?
Yeah, they are.
They must sell more than most comics do.
It does. It sells in the hundreds of thousands.
And it's sad. And I wish somebody, you know, if somebody from Wizards listening to this, you know, like, you know, get in touch with us and defend yourself. But I really wish, I've watched other magazines try to establish themselves, and they always fall. And I don't know what it is about what stranglehold they have on this industry in terms of, you know, printed journalism. Plus also, I mean, we talked about in a previous podcast is that, honestly, their printed journalism is outdated because the internet, we know about stuff that as it happens, and then you read about it 2 months later in Wizard. So it's just, I think more now, they're more like previews now than anything. They're a freaking catalog, so. Whatever, we spent too much time on it.
Todd, I think I'll read this one. Todd Kearns wrote in, he put a pin in our Frapper map last week, and he had written the comment that Ron was the whiniest dude in comics journalism, which we all loved. And Ron is actually getting a t-shirt printed up. So he apologized because he feels like that was an error, but we're here to tell you, Todd, you're not wrong.
Well, because he thought he forgot that we were quote-unquote real people who had lives outside the podcast and assumed that we were comic journalists.
We are.
We kind of are. We straddle the line. We're meta journalists.
Yes.
You know,
we're tastemakers and opinionaires.
Well, part of the whole idea of is a bloggist a journalist, and the whole blurring of the lines, not just in comics but in every kind of.
We're definitely in the gray area.
Yeah, we are. So, we're definitely not in one side or the other. But he also wants to know why we hate Rob Liefeld. We don't hate him personally, by the way.
No,
not at all. Nothing personally
He's
at all.
He's a nice young man.
Art is just awful.
It's the epitome of
skinny,
the bad art.
Skinny ankles. Although I still have 20 copies of X-Force number 1.
Well, I'm sure I do too. We bought them when we were 12.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. It's just sad. It's just
I don't know.
Well, it's just a poster child for the bad 90s art. Bad no sense of anatomy or human proportion,
all
no background.
Angular lines and then like
remember those Teen Titans issues that
were
just
awful.
Please let's not talk about that.
All right, let's move on. I can't Liefeld.
Do you
right,
really
Josh,
no,
you
but
get...
do you really like Liefeld?
No, not
maybe the guy who was asked. Like,
oh, yeah,
really?
Todd.
Like,
people definitely
I want
to
know what people like about his art. I know we have a really good friend who waited in line for hours to get a sketch from Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, like Rob Liefeld, write in and tell us. And if you are Rob Liefeld, write in and tell us why people should like you.
But I don't want a letter saying I like him because I like him. I want a reasoned
example.
Example
scan
of
a
why
page
you
and send
lo-
us.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Like, from an artistic standpoint.
Did you get those Teen Titans issues and actually like them? Because they were awful. Did you like his page in Superman Batman? Because it was awful. It's dated. It's a sad thing.
It's dated. It was always bad. Dated.
And you know what's really kind of sad is that, like, honestly, I'm Youngblood and some of the early Image work that he did wasn't that bad. It was actually pretty good. But the stuff I've seen from him recently has just, I don't know if he's doing his own inking or what, but it's just seemed awful. It seemed flat, like you said, and lifeless. Mm-hmm. So, bah.
Josh, why don't you take us out with the last one?
All right.
Last email.
Okay. This is kind of a longer one. I'm going to read all the way through it, but we thought it deserved the time, so I will skip the part at the beginning that he likes the podcast and all that stuff. And the reason that – I'm going to just read it as he's written it. The reason I'm writing is to respond to Bat, or the Bat, who apparently is the most popular person down here.
Who's taken over the podcast.
Yeah, he is.
iFanboy podcast starring the Bat.
Reason I'm writing is to respond to the Bat, who implied that you were too old to still be reading comics. Well, I'm 46 and have recently rediscovered the joy of reading comics. My interest in comics started in the mid to late 60s with Archie, Casper, Walt Disney, and the like. Then my older cousin turned me on to DC and Marvel when he passed a number of his well-kept comics down to me. I became a serious collector in the 70s, ultimately with a collection of about 2,000 or so. But like many, I stopped reading comics when I went to college. A few years ago, I developed a long-term chronic illness. Eventually, it affected my ability to read. Before my illness, I would read one or two novels, books a week. The illness was bad enough, but not to be able to read made my life so much worse. 2 years ago, on a whim, I pulled some issues from my comic collection and discovered that I could focus enough to be able to read them. Eventually, I found Dave's Comics, a wonderful local store here in the Richmond area. I got to know the folks who run it and told them about my renewed interest in comics. Since I hadn't read any storylines since the late 70s, I knew I'd missed a great deal. This suggested several graphic novel reprints of major storylines that helped me fill in the blanks. Then I began to collect on a weekly basis again. Since resuming and collecting, I've also gotten my 16-year-old daughter and 10-year-old son, which is an amazing task, interested in comics. I have to admit that when at first it felt strange. Here I am, a guy in his mid-40s with five children who started reading comics again. But soon I got over the, quote, geek stigma. I discovered the new writers and artists and realized how much more sophisticated comic books had become in terms of storytelling. It was a pleasant surprise. I grew up with Jack Kirby, Jim Aparo, Denny O'Neill, Frank Robbins, Jerry Tulloch, I don't know that name, Nestor Redondo, to name a few. Even though I would have preferred to have been motivated to renew my interest in comics because of something other than illness, nonetheless, I'm glad I rediscovered this art form. It has no age limit. Cheers, Steve. And then he had a quick little question. He said, have you read Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and The Birth of Comic Book by J.R. Jones? If so, have you ever thought about a comic book critique or a book critique podcast? And I just talked a lot, so why don't you answer?
Well, I mean,
I honestly don't think we need to say
this
anything.
This isn't really about that question. It's just, you know.
Right.
So, Steve, that's awesome that you dig the comics, and it's great that you got your kids into it and keep reading, and that's awesome. And I have read Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and the Birth of Comic Books, and it's a very good book.
Really?
And, yeah, it's in my library. I'll lend it to you if you want.
Okay.
And we have thought about a book critique podcast, but this podcast takes up most of our time. Maybe someday.
I'm really happy for him because – I don't know. I can't speak for Ron, but I can definitely speak for Josh in that he and I read like crazy, just regular non-comic books. Mm-hmm. We're constantly
whereas I just read comics,
right, and magazines.
And magazines.
Yeah, exactly. No, Ron reads, but I don't think you read to the crazy level that Josh
and I
do.
No, I don't.
You surprised me though, because every once in a while I'd be like, "Well, I was reading this book." You're like, "I read that." Oh. Yeah. You just don't talk about it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
We just don't shut up about it. Is our problem? But I mean, I know personally, I've got a stack of books at all times ready to go. And I'm always reading on. I read in the subway. I read at night. I read all the time. And I'm a book nerd. If I was suddenly able to not read anymore, I don't know. I'd be devastated. So I'm really happy that he's able to find something to fill that because I could definitely relate.
And even better that it's comics.
So. And what's really nice though is that he alluded to this, but what's nice now is that there was probably a long time where you wouldn't really get as much
literary
content.
Enjoyment.
And literary enjoyment out of comics. But I think in the last, you know, I don't know, 10 years, maybe a little more, we've really started to see a resurgence of comics that have content, have value, and have they feel like a meal rather than, you know, there's books you can read and it's just as fulfilling as reading a novel or something like that. And it's really good that stuff exists, and I'm glad. If you ever need any suggestions, let us know.
Yeah. So that wraps up our emails. So if you have a question for us, you can, as always, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. with any of your questions or discussion topics or hate mail or whatever. But
we're going to get some hate mail.
We have a new way for you all to contact us, which is very exciting. Starting Ooh. Now, you can call 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697 and leave us a voicemail. Ask your question in person, and then we'll edit it in here into the podcast, and we'll answer it pseudo live, answer it recorded.
Ron, and, do we know how to do that?
Yes, we do. I figured it out today. I'm very excited about this. So you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or if you don't mind your voice being on the podcast, call 1-888-FANBOYS. So very excited.
That's
about
an awesome
that.
Number.
Yeah. So what else are we excited about?
San Diego.
Woo! It's going to be a party.
We're going to be all over San Diego. We're getting there early. We're going to be there all week, all three of us. We're going to be attending all the cons and the panels. We're going to be updating live, or pseudo-live, from the floor of the con. We're going to be doing a podcast nightly. And all kinds of fun. Also, Josh, tell them about the panel.
If you're going to be there on Sunday morning, 11:30, I believe it's room 8. It's 11:30 to 1, so we got an hour and a half. The panel is moderated by B. Clay Moore. And basically, it's comics podcasters. We've got, I think, 10 podcasts represented. And like, it's all the big names and us. We're a big name, too, now, though, right? No? Okay.
No.
No, but seriously, we're going to be there. We're going to – with us is going to be Fanboy Radio and Comic Geek Speak and Indie Spinner Rack and Collected Comics Library and I Read Comics and
– Word Balloon, right?
Word Balloon.
And Augie.
Comics News Insider.
Yeah, Augie DeBleek.
From Pipeline. And Los Comic Geekos. I believe that's everybody. If I've missed anybody, I'm very sorry.
So it's 11:30 on Sunday.
11:30.
So be there or be square.
And if you go to iFanboy, if you go to iFanboy.com, you can go click on the top. We've got a San Diego logo. You can read all the information you need to know about going to San Diego and all of our coverage. And you can also see that Saturday night we're going to have a little bar night out for all the people that are going to be in San Diego of age. Sorry, Spider-Math. It's going to be at Tivoli, which is a bar.
He'll be in the window looking at us all sad. We'll bring him out a tea.
506 6th Avenue in San Diego. We're going to be there Saturday night. Oh, we haven't determined the time yet, but if you're going to come, come to the website, post in the thread that you're going to be there so we know to look for you.
If you can make it to that and come and hang out, that would be cool. If you can make it to the panel, come out and support us, I guess. That
Plus,
would be really
also,
cool.
Also, if you're going to be at the con and you see us on the floor, we'll have our badges and we'll be out and about, so just come up and say hi. We'd love
we'll
to
have stickers.
Yes, we will have stickers. So anybody who comes talk to us gets a sticker. So
yes.
I hope I just made a promise I can actually follow through with.
Dude, I still got a couple thousand.
Yeah, I got a couple hundred
here.
So awesome. So San Diego, it's gonna be fun. So
we're totally excited. I'm at the point now where I look at the day and I go, "And days to go."
Excited, but also scared because I realize I'm not prepared. I had to go shopping for clothes today. It was a big hassle.
Oh, jeez.
He doesn't have any clothes.
Let's not even get into that. Frapper Map.
Another huge week for the Frapper Map. Not really. I don't know. Maybe 223 people. Our latest Frapper guy is Johnny Destructo.
That's JD from the letter.
Yeah, from North Wales. And I was like, ooh, another England person. Pennsylvania.
Yeah, sorry.
So North Wales, Pennsylvania. Corex, who says we rock with no C. Jake, who says go team Venture from Arlington, Massachusetts. An anonymous person said great podcast, so that's pretty cool. And Mark from Nottingham, England says that we're the best podcast on the net has ever known, and we should be all kinds of proud, which we are.
Thanks.
So thank you, everybody. So you can go to the Frapper Map and stick your pin in if you haven't yet. It's at frapper.com/ifanboy, frapper.com/ifanboy. And we know that there's still several hundred of you who haven't stuck your pin in the map, so please go do that. Because we want to be globally represented.
Also,
we've still yet to break into Africa. So
also, if you like the show and you want to help out, go over to iTunes and write us a review, favorable if it must. Or over to Podcast Alley. That would be really cool.
You can vote for us on Podcast Alley and leave a comment.
Even better than that, you tell your friends, tell your comic shop people. You say, oh, I listen to a good podcast. You know, whatever. Spread the word. Help us out. That'd be really cool so that we have more people to write in letters and give us more stuff to talk about and all that stuff.
And we have yet another. This is all about new, exciting things. We have yet another fun thing for you all to do to celebrate iFanboy, which is we finally succumbed to the lore of MySpace. So if you go to myspace.com/ifanboy, we've got a profile up there now. And if you're on MySpace, please send us a friend invite, and we'll add you as a friend of the show. And we'll be basically posting, you know, kind of upcoming events and things like that, and basically trying to send you back to ifanboy.com. But we're on MySpace, so you can check it out there.
And don't forget, we mentioned it before, but the voicemail, you can leave us a message. We can, you know, answer your voicemail question on the air. It's 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697.
And finally, if you like what you hear and you like what you've heard before and you like the site, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations and drop some change in the donation jar, if you will. We offer our recommended donation as $1 for a podcast, but we also offer a monthly and yearly ongoing subscription donation of $3 a month or $20 for the year, or you can donate whatever amount you feel fit. And thank you to everybody who's donated this past week. To just an example, our new voicemail on our 1-800 number is an example of your dollars being put to work. So, thank you.
We said we had exciting plans, and we were not lying.
No, we weren't.
I can hardly contain my excitement.
So I think that's it, guys.
I think that is. So,
did we miss anything?
Probably.
All right. What do you do? We go read Uncanny again.
Go to the website. There's all sorts
ifanboy.com.
There's all sorts of really good discussion that's been going on. Superman threads blowing up. There's a nice discussion on Marvel. What did I say?
.com.
But he's just repeating it over and over. It's like subliminal.
No, that makes it difficult.
Ifanboy.com.
And come to San Diego if you're coming to say hi to us.
DC Marvel, Superman Returns, a lot of good discussion.
Yeah, so. Stuff on the, if, like I said, you know, if we missed any books, we want to talk about stuff that you like this week, argue with us, all that stuff, that's the place to do it.
What's my name?
Bitch?
No, I fanboy. Jesus!
Fanboy.com.
Wait, are you Ron or Josh? Like, wait, I'm Josh.
Oh yeah, which one are you?
See ya next week.
Bye guys.
Thanks.